Hello and welcome to the March 2015 IFRIC Update podcast. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the ISB, and I'm joined today by three members of staff, Hannah King, June Chung, and Takashi Yamagami. In today's podcast, we're going to talk about some of the items that were discussed at the Interpretation Committee meeting in March 2015, and the views that you'll hear today will be those of the presenters and not necessarily those of the Interpretations Committee or the IASB. Our first item we'll turn to relates to IAS 21 and foreign currency transactions. Now, Hannah, can you tell us a little bit about this issue?
Yes, at this month's meeting, the Interpretations Committee continued the development of its proposed draft interpretation of IAS 21. The effects of changes in foreign exchange rates. And the issue is about which exchange rate should be used when you translate foreign currency transactions, such as sales and purchases, and when an entity receives or pays advance consideration in a foreign currency. Now, the guidance in IAS 21 is that you use the exchange rate at the date the transaction first qualifies for recognition in accordance with IFRS. And at previous meetings, the Interpretations Committee has tentatively agreed that foreign currency transactions should be recognised using the exchange rate at the date that the advance consideration is received or paid, which is generally the date that we'd recognise a prepayment asset or a deferred income liability. Now, at this meeting, the Interpretations Committee discussed several clarifications to the scope of the draft interpretation and also to the transition requirements. And also, we looked at the interaction of the proposals with various aspects of IFRS 15, our new revenue standard, for revenue transactions.
And what did the Interpretations Committee decide at this meeting?
Well, as well as the various clarifications, the most important decision was that the Interpretations Committee reached general agreement about how to proceed with the proposed draft interpretation and decided to move to balloting the draft interpretation. This means it will be after balloting, it will be issued for publication for public comment. However, this is all subject to the clarifications agreed at the meeting and to any significant matters that arise from discussions with the IASB.
Now, Hannah, you mentioned the new revenue standard, IFRS 15, and the interactions with that. What exactly did the Interpretations Committee focus on with regard to this interpretation and IFRS 15?
Yes, well, Michael, what happened is while we were drafting the proposed interpretation, several questions arose about its interaction with various aspects of IFRS 15. And so although our draft interpretation actually applies to all foreign currency transactions and not just the revenue ones, we did consider at the March meeting with the Interpretations Committee these questions and the interactions with revenue. In doing so, the Interpretations Committee made a couple of observations. And the first is that an entity applies IFRS 15 firstly to its revenue transactions, and then subsequently you'd apply IAS 21 to determine the exchange rate to use to translate those foreign currency amounts into the entity's functional currency. And the second point is that the proposed interpretation is actually an interpretation of IAS 21 and not an interpretation of IFRS 15. And as a consequence, the Interpretations Committee tentatively agreed that the proposed draft interpretation should not include additional guidance on the application of IFRS 15, such as accounting for variable consideration, contract assets, or significant financing components.
Okay, so that clarifies in particular the scope. What are going to be the next steps for this project?
Okay, well, the next step is that we'll present a paper to the IASB at one of its future meetings. And tell them about the Interpretation Committee's discussions and the due process it's undertaken in preparing the proposed draft interpretation. And then if no significant matters arise from those discussions, we will prepare a ballot draft of the interpretation for the Interpretations Committee to vote upon.
Okay, that's good. Then, of course, we'll publish that draft interpretation and ask for comments in before considering how to finalise it.
Exactly.
Thank you. Our second issue today looks at an item related to IAS 12 and income taxes. Now, June, can you tell us a bit about what this issue is and what the concerns are that have been raised?
Well, the Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the accounting for the deferred tax asset for unrealized losses on debt instruments measured at fair value. The ISB observed that there is diversity in practice because of uncertainty about the application of some of the principles in IS 12. To resolve this issue in August 2014, the ISB published for comment the exposure draft proposed amendment to IS 12. We received 68 comment letters on the ED. Most respondents agreed with the general clarification in the proposed amendments. However, some respondents requested further clarification or simplification of the proposed amendments. Some other respondents did not support the proposed limited retrospective application of the amendment. At this meeting, the Interpretations Committee discussed those issues identified in analysis of the comment letters.
Okay, and what was the view of the Interpretations Committee, and what has it decided or proposed to do in respect of this analysis?
Well, the Interpretations Committee decided to propose that the ISB should proceed with the proposed amendments and agreed with some amendments to the proposed wording by revising the example illustrating paragraph 2060 to clarify that the debt instrument is measured at fair value and remove information that is superfluous to the objective of the example, and deleting the last two sentences of paragraph 29 big A and the examples in the last sentence of paragraph BC 15, adding a sentence in paragraph BC 18 to clarify taxable profit excluding tax deductions used for assessing the utilization of deductible temporary differences.
So let's go back to the last question that I asked. Now, what was the view of the Interpretations Committee with regards to this analysis, and what has it decided or proposed to do?
The Interpretations Committee decided to propose that the ISB should proceed with the proposed amendments subject to some changes to the proposed wording to make it clearer and more concise. The Interpretations Committee also recommended that the example illustrating paragraph 2060 should be further shortened and identification of the tax base in the example should be further explained in the basis for conclusions. And limited retrospective application should be further clarified, and recycling OCI in subsequent periods should be considered as well. In particular, the Interpretations Committee expressed a concern about the guidance on recovering an asset more than its carrying amount in assessing future taxable profit. So the Interpretations Committee asked the staff to include some discussion of the concern in the basis for conclusions that it may not be probable when an asset is measured at fair value and its recovery is not based on contractual cash flows.
So what are the next steps now for us on this project?
We will bring the Interpretation Committee's recommendation to a future ISB meeting.
Okay, so the ISB will be asked to consider the proposals from the Interpretations Committee and subject to that then finalisation of the amendment. Good. Thank you, June. For our third issue, we turn to some agenda decisions that were finalised at the Interpretation Committee meeting. Now, there were a number of agenda decisions relating to IFRS 11 on joint arrangements that were published in tentative form in November and were open for comment. We've received a number of comment letters relating to those, and these were discussed at the March meeting. Now, there were two agenda decisions in particular that we wanted to look at, and Takashi, the first one related to the classification of joint arrangements and the assessment of other facts and circumstances. Can you tell us about this one?
Yes, For this general decision, the Interpretations Committee noted that the assessment of other facts and circumstances, as noted in paragraph 17 of IFRS 11, should focus on whether each party to the joint arrangement has rights to the assets and obligations for the liabilities relating to the joint arrangement. It also noted that the consideration of other facts and circumstances is a test of whether other facts and circumstances override the rights and obligations conferred upon the party by the legal form of the separate vehicle. Consequently, the Interpretations Committee determined that the assessment of other facts and circumstances should be undertaken with a view towards whether those facts and circumstances create enforceable rights to the assets and obligations for liabilities.
What was the main concern raised in the comment letters about this tentative agenda decision?
One of the respondents to the tentative agenda decision expressed the concern that some may regard the wordings of the tentative agenda decision as suggesting that a party to a joint arrangement should not consider constructive obligations for the purpose of classification of the joint arrangement.
And what were the views of the Interpretations Committee on this point?
In relation to constructive obligations in the context of IFRS 11, one of the members noted that the ISP had decided that it was important to think about whether the joint arrangement was in a separate vehicle, and that for the existence of a separate vehicle to be overcome solely by a public statement that parties intend to take over the output seems to be inconsistent with the ISP's conclusions. The Interpretations Committee also noted that presence of a separate vehicle has to be overcome by enforceable rights and obligations, and that mere management intent would not overcome the corporate veil of a separate vehicle. And many members of the Interpretations Committee thought that it was important to keep the notion of enforceability because it is a part of what needs to be considered in assessing other facts and circumstances, and also it better reflects the previous discussions of the Interpretations Committee.
So what has the Interpretations Committee decided in respect to this agenda decision?
So as a result of the discussion, the Interpretations Committee decided to reaffirm the wordings included in the tentative agenda decision, noting the importance of enforceability of rights and obligations in the context of an assessment of other facts and circumstances in accordance with IFRS 11.
Thank you. And the second agenda decision then just wanted to look at was relating to the accounting by the joint operator and in particular the recognition of revenue by a joint operator. So Takashi, can you tell us a little bit about this one as well?
Yes, sure. For agenda decision D, it deals with revenue recognition by a joint operator according to paragraph 20D of IFRS 11. That paragraph requires joint operators to recognize their share of the revenue from the sale of the output by the joint operation. The Interpretations Committee noted that if the parties to the joint operation take all the output from the joint operation in proportion to the rights to the output, the application of paragraph 20D would not result in the recognition of revenue by the parties. This is because if the parties purchase all the output from the joint operation in proportion to the rights to the output, they would recognize their revenue only when they sell the output to third parties, which is an application of paragraph 20C of IFRS 11.
And Takashi, what was the main concern raised in relation to this tentative agenda decision?
So one of the respondents to the tentative agenda decision expressed the concern that some may read the decision as setting out a blanket rule that would be applicable in any circumstance, thus prohibiting revenue recognition in all circumstances where parties take all the output from the joint operation. The respondent provided a different fact pattern where parties to the joint operation take all the output from the joint operation, but not in proportion to the rights to the output, in which case it thought revenue recognition could arise.
And what were the views of the Interpretations Committee with regard to this?
Some members of the Interpretations Committee noted that there could be a situation where revenue recognition might occur in the circumstance described by the respondent. However, it noted that in that particular circumstance, the parties would recognize revenue in accordance with paragraph 20C of IFRS 11 rather than paragraph 20D.
So in the light of this discussion, what has the Interpretations Committee decided?
So the Interpretations Committee decided to keep a focus on the fact pattern it has been looking at, which is where parties take all the output from the joint operation in proportion to the ratio of the output. And that in this particular circumstance, the joint operators did not recognize revenue on the basis of paragraph 20D of IFRS 11.
Thank you. This brings us now to the end of the discussions relating to these agenda decisions, and those are now published for in final form in IFRIC Update.
Yes.
Well, that brings us to the end of the IFRIC Update podcast for March 2015, and thank you very much for listening. This brings us to the end of the IFRIC Update podcast for March 2015. The full details of all proceedings of the Interpretation Committee meeting can be found in the IFRIC Update newsletter, which is available on the IFRS website. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.